and welcome back to the VF Existential Crisis Podcast. I'm Chris, and this is Graham. We talked a few weeks ago, I think, at this point, depending on when you're listening to this, about bidding. It's not everyone's favorite topic, but it's one thing that I think a lot of people don't either aren't a part of or don't understand, but are greatly affected by, as it, you know, it determines the framework of success for a project right off the bat. And in that episode, we talked more about sort of the macro details of, like, you know, are you trying to win this job? Are you trying to, is this a pre-existing relationship? Like, all the things that kind of go into the ethos or into the air before you even sit down to do the technical bid. So hopefully that was helpful, because that's something I don't think, if you, even VFX supervisors may not necessarily be, or producers may not be a part of that. That's more on the business side of things. Like, how bad do we need this job is really, I guess, what it boils down to. So with that in mind, we thought we would go a little bit deeper into how things work and how we translate those bids into, you know, reality on the floor for people who are working in visual effects. Because I think there's a lot of misconceptions, and there's a lot of the most sort of common complaints from any VFX crew are, this client's really mean, or this was way underbid. That's a classic line, especially if you didn't bid it in the first place. It's an easy, lazy, in my opinion, often, and I've been guilty of it as well, a lazy contrarian approach to not actually trying to solve the problem. And often it's it can be true, but often it's sort of like a crutch for not actually trying to address the problems of the show that are coming. I'm sure you've experienced that, Graham. This is way underbid, it can't be done, blah blah blah, that kind of.
Yeah, it's interesting, because like an individual shot underbid, you know, usually it's manageable. Like 90% of shots are kind of in some kind of average difficulty, let's say. It's really the 10% that swing it one way or the other. These are like your CG flyover shots, your massive explosions, your, you know, proto animation, that kind of stuff. And I guess the two mistakes are this: you have a really complex shot where you underestimate the complexity, and so you've undersold your CG team days, and then they feel under pressure. But kind of an equal problem is if you have 1,000 driving comps and you underbid them by a day or even half a day, that could totally screw you too, right?
Yeah.
So it's like there's kind of risk at each side, the complexity side and the sort of mass side. So those are the two buckets I think deserve extra scrutiny when you're approving a bid.
Yeah, and I think it depends a lot on how, and this is kind of what I wanted to get into, because I think this is, to me, it's interesting. It's always been interesting, and people generally don't want to talk to me about it. But like how that is interpreted in the studio matters a lot. Sure. So for example, if you underbid one shot and it's a big shot, it's probably fine if you're using an approach that is looking at the whole picture, you know, and you've done your resourcing with that in mind. If you kind of go down the route of the sort of like the perfect estimate, which we'll talk a little bit more about, and the expectation from all the people around you is that if you bid a day, it has to be a day, and it's if it's not a day, it's a total failure, and the department that gets it is like, well, it's only a day, I can only do it, you know, like if everyone starts to get like really rigid about it, and that's the way your studio functions, then that is a bigger problem. But it's not my preferred way of working. But anyways, we'll get into those details in a bit. But
yeah, the biggest morale issue is if someone gets a complex shot and they're it's bid for a day and it's a 4-day job or a week job, like there's a tendency to just throw up your hands and say, well, it's impossible, and therefore I will not try. It's not that common, but there are, I've seen that before.
Yeah.
I think you just got to do your best. Like you can't sit in idleness while nothing's happening. And, you know, you just have to do your best with what you've got and push through.
That is effectively what VFX is. We have this idea. We would like to get it on screen. We can't shoot it practically. How much do you think that will cost? Right?
Yeah.
And then you're like, I don't know, 5,000. And then you're like, oh shit, that didn't work. Then it's sort of like, well, what can, is it, you know, is it because you underbid it? You underestimated the complexity. And then there's a certain amount of like responsibility the team and the management and the company has to take for that.
Oh, sure. Like, yeah, there's the underbid issue, but I've also seen like, you know, comp's pretty good example. Like they get handed what they perceive as a pile of crap from the upstream departments, but like they might not be aware that the tiny lighting team is finishing three shows at the same time because they were supposed to be spread out in sequence, but they all landed at the same time. And,
yeah,
you know, the asset team shrank, and so the assets and textures are not as perfect. And so they're doing a lot more repair work than was bid. So, like, actually the scope of work, there's a scope creep that was created by the studio and not by the client, just in the execution of the work. And unfortunately, that's just something that has to get eaten by the team.
Yeah, I think the sort of complaining is generally more when departments are isolated from each other. The teams are bigger, because it's been my experience that if you create an awareness and understanding of the overall goal within a team of say 30 people, and there's departments within them, they're much more likely to work together to solve the problems than if you have silos of 300 people of, you know, 10, 30, 20 people who are all kind of like protecting their domain. It also, like, again, has a lot to do with the studio. If the studio, like the department head gets flack on every single department, every single bid that comes through, and like you can get in situations where bid days or some or whatever metric becomes more important than making money on and delivering the show. So I've seen where we have delivered a show and we have made money, and people are still getting in trouble for not hitting the metric that they were supposed to hit. And I think that's interesting. Like, it's worth looking at. Like, those are data points for like improvement or, you know, possibly, you know, action. But it's sort of like, what are you talking about? A lot of times when I maneuver through a studio trying to get a budget completed, implemented, approved, and acted on, a lot of the struggle is the internal mechanisms of the team. And in my experience, the bigger the studio, the more effort you have to spend fighting the studio for them to understand what you're even trying to do. So this is kind of what I wanted to talk a little bit about today, I think. We could start by talking about, you know, what are those metrics? So when you get so let's say we're bidding a normal show, there's no extra pressure, we want to bid it properly. You know, there's different philosophies of that too, where you get a script and you say, okay, we're bidding to win it. So you're not padding the stats, right? So every time but most times you go to an artist or even like a lead or CG supervisor, they're thinking about, this is where perspective matters. So they're thinking about what's the worst case scenario, because they're trying to cover their ass.
Especially supervisors. They're notorious for wanting to have all the options, and they know that all the options require days. So they often pad the days to
but give this themselves is a,
anyway.
This
they think they're going to have, they're going to think they're going to need whether they really need it or not.
But that's exact. I would counter. I'm going to, I agree with you, but I'm going to counter that. That is partly because based on the culture you've created in the studio. So sure. if someone bids 4 days and it takes five and you come down on them every single time, then of course the next time they're going to bid five or six.
Yeah. If you have a blame culture for sure.
Yeah.
Then you get in my opinion, you get into these sort of departmental rivalries and finger pointing and all that kind of stuff, because no one wants to be left holding the bag if there's an inquisition going on. Right.
That's right.
So
that's right.
If you have that kind of environment, the stakes for a mistake go up, and no one wants to be held accountable for mistakes that are way outside their control. And that's fair.
Yeah. The other thing too, is I think, with the boom in VFX, a lot of people got pushed into those positions without any real experience in them. So I don't know who said it to me, but basically it's like, never bring an artist to a client review because I had to get over this coming from the production side, particularly the production manager side, where the production managers are also like the top worst people to deal with when bidding, because their job is to try to figure out what could go wrong. So they're usually the most negative person. If you can get them on site, they're like the Scotty in the Enterprise. Like, I can't take much more of this guy. Like, it's usually the CG supervisor and the production manager, sometimes a comp supervisor, but not as much, but at least in my experience, and who are kind of thinking about all the things that are the worst case scenario. So when you're dealing with those people, you have to be like, okay, I understand it's good to hear like, hey, this could be a disaster. Like it's easy to be like, oh my God, especially as a producer, you're just trying to get a reasonable number where it's like, we talked last time about, if I bid it at 40 days and everybody else is bidding at 10 days, I don't get the job. And then we all don't work, but you do still have to listen to those things. I always like try to reframe it as, what do you think the most complicated shot is, or what do you think the worst case scenario is for this show? It's sort of, I've read this book once about system failure, and it's like a pre-mortem. Like, if you imagine this, so instead of getting people to like talk about bidding, you can get in a zone when you're bidding where you start to believe your own press. You know what I mean? Like, you start to believe things that aren't true because you're just trying to get through the bid. This happens all the time. I find myself, so I get a script, I start to look at it, I try to get an idea of what the client's goals are. And especially, it's different if you're working at a giant studio where there's a humongous expectation. That was an adjustment for me to say, like, actually, no, add more days, add, like, the producers, when I went to different places, have said, no, add way more. I'm like, okay, like, at a place that was smaller, we could have done that shot for much less. But at a big thing there, like, there's an expectation of, inefficiency or big machine type problems. I mean, you do get like an insane quality upgrade sometimes as a part of that, not always, but sometimes. But anyway, so you're breaking down shots, you're trying to figure out what's most important, because if you're just looking at a script and nothing's been shot, then you're basically trying to help either the client supervisor or the client in whatever form get an idea of what this is going to take to do and what things are expensive and what things are cheap, so that when they go to shoot, they know, well, if I have to do 10 more driving comps, it's not going to be the end of the world. But if I shoot 200, space station shots, or I plan on then those are going to be really expensive. So what they're looking for is like the menu for their show, in a way. And, they are looking at things like average shots and things like that. So in VFX, you tend to be focused on bid days and shot costs. When you go to a client, you never talk about bid days, like, at all, ever. You only talk about that internally. You really don't want them to know it takes 2 days, because then you get in weird arguments with the clients. Well, why would it take 2 days? It's like, well, that's none of your business, really. Like, except from a scheduling perspective. It's like, so this is one of the things, I think the first things is like, when you're talking to clients, you're talking to them in money and shots, or an animation, seconds of animation, which is a different kind of thing, or minutes of animation, or cost per minute, as they was a pretty common one to hear. And then when you go internal, you're talking about days and days and hours, or quotas, or seconds per week, some breakdown of time overall. But that's something that's kind of an interesting thing. So when you're doing the like a bid, you know, you're essentially trying to estimate time. So if you do it on your own, you can have, you know, some places have templates. This is an easy shot, this is a hard shot. That's a useful tool to like to have like in mind. A hard shot should be about 5 days and a easy shot should be 2 days. It gives you kind of a framework, and then you're kind of trying to slot this shot in. Well, this shot has this. But the main reason you're going and breaking down each shot is either to like try to come up with a perfect bid, which I have thoughts about, but in visual effects particularly, and this is why I feel like a lot of times people bid, but they don't put in the assumptions. The assumptions are key. Mm-hmm. What you're protecting yourself for when it changes. So if it's a script item, you're going, okay, you know, guy, you know, there's this many pages of driving shots. You're putting in assumptions saying, because there's no pictures, you're like, well, a general driving shot, maybe you have data on what you normally pay for costs for those, or maybe it's market driven, like no one will really pay more than $3,000 for a driving shot. There's been places where I work where that has been more of a driving factor. So you can separate those things. You can say, okay, well, it takes a day for this, a day for this, a day for this. So that's a 3-day shot. That could translate directly to, let's say, $300 or $30,000, whatever, that, let's say $100 per day, which is ridiculous, but that way we won't give away any trade secrets. But so $300. If someone wants to sell that for $290, they could. You could, you know, discount the whole project. You could discount your day rate. You could discount your bid days. So this is where the philosophy of the studio comes in. I've worked at places where it's like we implemented a bid day strategy, because up until that point, they did not have a real handle on that. They were just doing it by feel. And the agreement across all parties was, we are going to assume that the appropriate artist, so junior, senior, whatever, we're not going to worry about that. This is a senior artist job. We're assuming they get 1 day. So, and that day is legitimate and it should be able to get done. We're not high, we're not low. On the other side of that, when we broke down the cost of the bid day, we assumed that it would be a senior artist, right? So that if we were, so there was an opportunity if you could, if a junior art, because that was a small studio, and sometimes the junior artists were like punching way above their weight, and sometimes they took longer. So you could, so a bid day at a senior artist rate, if a junior picks up that shot and they get it done, that's a win. So it encouraged the philosophy of letting the junior guys try it, because it was advantageous to everybody.
Yeah.
And if they couldn't, and it took them 2 or 3 days, wasn't the end of the world, right? That was more of a scheduling problem than a bid day problem.
What's interesting too is like, you're talking like at a show level, like, you know, some artists are better than other artists. Then you get to the studio level, it's like some teams are better than other teams. So like, you know, you might find that assets, which is often underbid because clients don't like to pay for assets, underperform the bid days. They are always over. But maybe you've got a lighting team that just kicks ass because of the technology, the skill set. And so they're always under. And then you go to the higher level, it's like, if you're managing multiple studios, like which studio has the skill set to do this the best? And maybe it's in India, maybe it's in Vancouver or Toronto. So it's interesting to hear you talk about, like, you know, you want to place the work with the right individual, because that same logic goes up as you scale to teams and studios.
That to me is what makes or breaks the show. Because if you bid close to right, you should be able to do it. There's other problems you may encounter, like a really difficult client or the power goes out for 3 days or whatever it is. Like, but in general, you should be able to do that. But it depends. Like in the scenario I'm talking about, we all sat down together, collectively decided, and everyone understood this is what a bid day is. And then we started to encourage, because we were implementing the system, the client or the artist starting to talk about their own and being more aware of their own time without necessarily, I mean, it can be treated as like a pressure, but it depends how you implement it. So I started to go to every artist and say, how long, this is the brief. I wasn't a supervisor, this is more as a production person. This is the brief. What do you think this will take? And I would know what the supervisor bid. And they'd say, so say it was a 3-day shot. I said, well, I think I can get it done in a day. I'd be like, okay, awesome. If you can get it done in a day, then we'll have some extra time for this. So I would be pretty open about that. Not necessarily always completely open about the details, but because it's too much information. But it's also like, that's amazing. Great. Or someone said, I think it's going to take me all week. Then I would say, okay, any reason why? And then they would explain why. And then usually that would get me to get the lead compositor in that case to come and talk to them. And maybe they were misinterpreting, or maybe the bid was wrong.
Maybe their approach was wrong. Like maybe they thought they had to do X, Y, and Z, but really you only need to do Y and Z. And so a more senior person can come in and say, oh, no, you're overcomplicating.
Yeah, exactly. Because again, my whole VFX philosophy is anxiety is everything in VFX. So especially if you have the more creatively subjective a shot is, the more the bids are going to be wildly different, because no one really, they're guessing. It's an estimate. And you're like, I don't know, man, that could take like 2 weeks or something, you know, like. Once it gets past like days and gets into weeks, I feel like no one has an idea what they're talking about anymore. And then you have to start to break it down again. But the whole exercise of that was that you start to learn this person's an optimistic person. This person's a pessimistic person. This person's usually dead on and I can like, you know, schedule my lunch off this person's estimates. And then also when you sort of like, give them the data back. You say, hey, you know, you said this was going to take you 3 days, but you got it done in two. And so, and then you'd see people start to like adjust. There's still some people that would like, they're artists and they don't want to be burdened by this stuff and whatever. But generally speaking, we were able to get shows done really efficiently from a place where it was extremely inefficient before. And then we hit like a ceiling. There's a point where
you
can plan out a show. We were planning the show in detail, like scheduling in detail based on everyone's participation and our estimates. But once you got over like $500,000 in budget or $1 million in budget, it became too much data all the time. And the variables that would throw things off became too big. And then you start to then, you know, reframe it. Like, well, instead of like how this one shot, how long do you think you can get these two shots or these three shots done this week? So you get into that kind of stuff. And it's all the same calculation and all the same currency, if you will. Like, you know, if I have three shots and they're 3 days each and you can get three of them done in 5 days, then we all win a day back. And my feeling on this kind of stuff is you will lose days. I don't care how good your bid was. Sure. Shit will happen. And if we're aggressive at the beginning of the process, you will bank days, and then you can do things like not have a crisis when something goes wrong, or not have to stop the whole show if you need to spend an extra 5 days or extend someone for on the show for a week. So collectively, to me, that's the game that you're playing. But it sort of comes down to how easy that is to play is how the sort of bid day or how the structure of that is done. So I think we should talk about what a bid day is too, because I think obviously for an artist, it's like you have this day to do it. What does that day assume? Does it assume you are working 8 hours on that shot? Does it assume you are working six and going to dailies and, going to the company meeting, so that's just at the bottom, but it also, and you can maybe talk more to this, it assumes that there is, it can be done differently. If you don't have a line item in your budget for management or technology, which I have seen, I've worked with one company that did that. They had a management cost, actually two companies that have like, they pay for their management per week or whatever. So if the show's going to be 16 weeks, you're going to pay a management cost, you're going to pay a technical cost. And then that, as a result, their per day cost, artist cost is lower. But most people, most studios build that all into a day rate. And this is not just VFX, it's, construction, everything else, well, all those kind of things. So that would include what? It would include, labor is the big...
software licenses,
software,
rent,
power,
render. Render is the hard one because you often, you make a mistake and you're trying to recover by rendering a fix super fast. And the faster you want to fix it, the bigger the shot, the more expensive it becomes.
It would include HR, the finance
team. Overtime's a huge one. Overtime's a killer for a budget. Yeah. Like suddenly, you're doing 1.5 costs per day instead of one. And, you do that for 6 weeks and suddenly...
But that wouldn't be included in a bid day.
No, I'm just thinking in terms of like where things go awry. You're right. Yeah, you're right. It's just... That's not in a bid day, but when that happens, that totally will take a budget.
Well, that's why overtime is probably the number one like flag for any show. If you're doing overtime, even if it makes sense, and it's, I always have to prove that overtime is smart. And my philosophy on that is, it's better to do less overtime early than more overtime late. But it's very difficult to convince finance and business people that that is true, because they would like to hope that you just avoid it completely.
Yeah.
But, it's one of those things where it's like when there's one studio we worked in Ontario at the time, I think it's still true, but you could work anywhere from 40 to 44 hours and it was still considered your regular salary. So we would try to work 40. But every once in a while, we just ask people, like, can you put in the extra, like, couple hours this week? And that, especially on a TV schedule, if you miss your milestones or your gates, there's that kind of, you were talking about it earlier, like that compounding failure. So, for example, it's better if the asset team burns a little bit of overtime to make sure the lighting and comp team are not idle. Because there's two things that kind of kill a budget, and it's overtime and idle.
Yeah. As we're talking here, I'm reflecting, I think in my entire career, I've had two shows go like clockwork. And what I mean by that is like really knowledgeable client, not out to screw us, approved shots when they were actually done and allowed us to move forward. Oftentimes what happens is people look at the schedule and say, well, the shot's not due for 6 weeks or 6 months. I'm not approving this. I want to keep it open. So in case something changes, and that is fucking the kiss of death, man. Like you have your team built around delivering X number of shots per week. And if they don't close out of shots, you just leave your liability open.
But that's the mistake.
Infinitely. It's really important. Yeah, exactly. This is my whole point. It's really important to be upfront with your client and close things out because, There's often a breaking point in a show where like the clock just doesn't allow for notes anymore, right? And when that happens, it's actually for a manager like a relief because things start to go. But there's so many shots where it's like, man, if they had just stopped pixel fucking this 6 weeks ago, it hasn't materially changed, But the client was like, oh, you know, I think it's really challenging. But if you're good at it, that's where you can make or break a show.
I'm going to challenge you there. Sure. Because I feel that is a thing that people talk about a lot, and it's valid. But it's also like, you said you had two work like that. So if all the
two work perfectly, we're okay.
Okay. But if every other single show in the world doesn't work like that, why are you assuming it will?
No, that's the whole point. It's like the perfect show is the aberration, the incredible aberration.
Exactly.
Yeah. Both shows, you are wrangling the client, and that doesn't mean it's confrontational, but like the client's incentives are different than yours, right? The client wants to have as many choices as possible for as long as possible for as little cost as possible. You have the exact opposite. You want to do this shit as fast as possible with as few notes as possible with as little crew as possible. And so this is where you get into the issue of change orders of like,
yeah,
you know, when you're in dailies, and the biggest challenge I have found is that it's like the boiling a frog analogy. The changes start very small, and then, you know, you want to be client service centric. So they ask for something that's a little bit deviation, fine. But then you get a note on the deviation and you're like, okay, fine. But then the note on the deviation opens up three other things. And suddenly you're in a position where you've been doing this thing out of client goodwill, but now they're asking for like you to spend significant time on something. And it's like, okay, well, this is a change order. But that conversation is way easier if you're what I would call on the moral high ground with your client. That is to say,
yeah,
you're up to date, you know, you're delivering according to the schedule you've set out with the client. Like if you're in that zone, you're fine. But like oftentimes these shows spiral in a way. Like I'm happy to say there's not too many shows that have completely spiraled on me, but it happens, right? And like for whatever reason, the team loses the sort of pattern. And then you're not on the moral high ground. There is some execution risk that's happened at the studio and delivering the work. And then the client's pushing for this additional stuff. And there's a lot of pressure to like, as a make good effort, just eat it. But then it's actually making a bad problem worse potentially.
You're talking more about managing a show than the bid.
Yeah, I know, but that's more my specialty anyway. But I just think that the bid days is just the beginning of project execution, I suppose. Like,
I'll tell you what usually causes that, in at least from the technical bidding perspective, what usually causes that is the kind of perfection seeking scenario.
Sure. Yeah.
So I think it's naive, and I'm not calling you naive. I know you know better.
Yeah.
But I think you brought up a good point, and it's a good segue into this. Is like, okay, so this shot should be 5 days. Okay. If you treat it as if like you're the only person in the room who has, I mean, the reality is we're in a dialogue with the clients about what they want. It's a service business. So if I say, so maybe in that 5 days of the shot, there's 2 days that are non-subjective. Like the track is good. The roto is good.
Yeah.
You know, the asset is in the shot doing the thing. Great. Those things you can schedule and plan like clockwork. And you should. But the next 2.5 days, if you treat them as if they are a widget that needs to be built, then you are making the mistake. And this is why I think this is where I feel like the business side, owners, finance people would love to make this non-subjective.
Correct. Yeah.
And if you ask them, they all know it's subjective, but they create systems that don't allow people to think. So for example, if my 5 days gives me $500 to pay whoever I need to pay to do the thing, then you're giving me flexibility. You're giving the team flexibility in times, whatever many shots. You're giving team flexibility to push and pull and manipulate, and you know, inside that kind of tense framework, you can kind of maneuver, and then like, okay, this shot got approved. They really like that one. So boom, 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 boom. Now these become less subjective, and there's all this stuff. But if you say you have 3 days of labor and that is it, and that you must use this, and it, because you put it in a schedule 2 years ago, it starts on this day and ends on that day, and there's no negotiating, which is pretty common in bigger studios or people trying to be bigger studios, then you're in the position where it's like, you've used the three, and this is also, again, another thing about how you use the 3 days. If the department takes the 3 days, does the first version and goes, done.
Yeah,
then,
for sure.
Then you're done. So like it requires people at every level to have their brains. So like if I have, and this goes from the producers to the supervisors, to the leads, to the whatever, to the artists themselves, a smart artist who says 3 days goes, well, I'm going to try to get the first version out as soon as, like, it's exactly the same rhythm we would try to the client. Try to get the first version out quickly to get initial feedback, confirm what we all thought we were doing, and then iterate. But that is not easy to, you need time for the iteration. So like one of my strategies in that is to throw out bid days and go and move towards phase quotas. Like, and it sounds complicated, but it's basically like worry about temps and then worry about finals later. Because if
you can,
because the client is also like building this picture in their mind as well. Like they have an idea of what you're going to do, and then you show them and you're like, you exceed their expectation. Oh, amazing. Or it's not exactly what they're looking for. Mm. So maybe you don't have 40 people trying to crank out all the shots while the client's not working on stuff, but you need to be able to then pivot to other work. And so if you have these like really rigid, oh, this is exactly what you should have done. Like I worked at a place where if you put in, so we talked about averages. If you said, okay, well, you know, there's, and this is a place that had a lot of shots, so you needed to bid pretty quickly and kind of generically, like, okay, there's 300 shots. They're basically all, you know, they might have a little bit of paint work in them, a little bit of roto, but they're generally not too bad. So I'm just going to put a half day of roto and half day of paint in all of them. And that creates this kind of, you know, 200 day pool of roto. That should be enough to get all these shots done. But then the order comes to the department and it says a half day of paint, and they try to paint something when there's no tracking markers in there. Like, what? Like, so there's these kind of like disconnects that I think really waste a lot of time. And then once you've spent that time, the budget's gone. And then you create these crises of, oh, we're over budget. Well,
I think ironically, I was agreeing with you. We were saying similar things. Like the bid day is just the beginning. Unfortunately, it's the beginning of the story. And like, you're actually bidding for a show that goes somewhat normally. You should always bake in contingency days, like a percentage of each department. And, you know, maybe the contingency days get spent in lighting. Who cares? As long as it kind of evens out in the end, right? But in order for you to kind of get that rhythm where a day is a day and you're executing, you need to keep the client faith. And so this ties in exactly with what, there's a couple of points where I think you can set yourself up for success. Version zeros, for example, it sounds so ridiculous, but that's for a savvy producer. If your session or version zeros take forever, it's like a flag. I've seen producers question, well, why is it taking so long? Your first round of temps, like, you know, are you over executing and impressing the client, getting them on board? If you get that goodwill at a very early stage, they will give you the latitude to not show them stuff for a while. They're like, okay, I can see you guys, A, you can do it quality wise, and B, you know what you're doing, you know.
It's the anxiety thing again.
Wise. And then I'm going to look at the vendor who's not shown me anything yet. But if you're that vendor who hasn't shown anything yet, or you show something that misses the mark, the scrutiny level goes up. And then once the scrutiny level goes up, you're in a really tough spot, because then they want to see things often. Then they want to see things perhaps without giving you the sufficient time to make the changes that they want to see. And you become on this treadmill of like band-aiding stuff often.
You're micromanaged. And creating
more problems in a vain effort. So like, again, it goes back to like, client management. Sometimes you have to just say, look, if you want this, I need 3 weeks. You're not going to see another version for 3 weeks because I need to reboot the machine. And if you have a savvy producer, they'll say, okay, I get where you're coming from.
But again, it goes back to, it's like, again, so the bid is the framework in which you are all getting paid, essentially. And the process is about managing anxiety. So I just gave you $5 million on a piece of paper and your demo reel. And so I'd like to feel like I was a good decision as early as possible.
Yeah. So and then, I think one thing that people forget is like the client side team also have bosses. And so like if they're in a daily session with the director and the director's like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
They get shit on and then it cascades down. Or if they have an exec on their team saying, hey, you've blown your budget. Like what the hell's going on? So I was gonna say that there's accountability everywhere.
Yeah. But I think you can take the same logic. So this bidding idea, like, hey, how much time does this take? I wish artists paid more attention. And I do think the people who do pay attention to that are better freelance people. And in this climate, you need to be a better business person.
Yeah.
Because it matters more. So the same logic, okay, I just gave you 10 shots as the department head, VFX supervisor, whatever. I would like you to show as early as possible that that was a good decision for me. So I stop worrying about you. So when I got into visual effects, I was working in a pretty volatile place and I realized I'm going to take the person who's going to be the biggest pain in my ass and make sure they're happy. And you know, I take that same logic to every client. It's like, and internally as well, it works like backwards as well. Like what's the biggest concern? We used to do this exercise at Rocket where I did a lot of the resource planning at Rocket Science, and if not all of it at one point. And so this is an interesting topic too. So you get a bid day, you know, you have a average per shot or whatever. Then the next phase of that is to figure out, how many people you need, right? So bid days can translate to an exact formula of how many people you need. Like there are 100 days of comp, so there should be 100 days of comp people. I think that's the bare minimum. Like if you want to get a show done, and this goes back to the philosophy. I've worked at places where they've tried to be, it's like you need 0.3 of a person for this day. And it's like, okay, well, I can't hire 0.3 of a person. So it's already logically ridiculous. But there's an opportunity, which I don't know that everyone takes, where it's like, okay, so you have 100 days of comp. What if, as the resource manager and the hiring team, let's say 100 days of comp is 100 senior days of comp, let's say. What if I can hire good people, you know, like say it's 4 people. What if I can hire 1 senior, 1 intermediate, and 2 really great juniors that everyone's excited about? And like, it's a little bit of a risk, a little bit more management, but, and because of that, now I have 150 days of comp. Well, now I know that I have a buffer. That's how, to me, it's very hard to like budget a contingency because I've only seen that work in really, really big shows, like feature animated shows where the client wants you to tell them you have a backup plan. Mm-hmm. But that's because you're the sole vendor on that show. And they're like, it's more of a, like a more of a film production scenario where it's like, you have a backup plan, right? Yes. Okay. We have 10% of this budget that we can implement in a contingency. And then they monitor the contingency. But when you're working on a multi-vendor show or smaller VFX show, you can't be like, well, we're going to budget 15% just in case, because that's essentially, you might do that, but you can't show that. And the risk of adding that 15% is that it may push your budget to a point where you don't get the show. So, you know, again, there could be internal mechanisms. Maybe your bid day includes some contingency.
Could be. I mean, how the mechanism works can vary, but like I just think it's important, because getting to your whole general point is like this sort of ultra precise, mythical perfect bid doesn't really exist. Like
the perfection trap, the people, and like I multiple people have come to me and said, you know, we're developing a system where it's going to be like perfect, it's going to schedule everything perfect, and I'm like, and then my immediate thought is,
Well, it's usually from finance or ownership, right? Like,
yes,
and that's where those production things come from. Let's face it, like a lot of finance people, when they come into visual effects, because usually they're coming from somewhere else, like it's a weird change, because they might have been making widgets, they might have been selling services, but this is a business unlike any other. And like coming to terms with the fluidity of clients and all that stuff is pretty challenging. So I understand the sentiment of trying to inject some certainty into an uncertain system. But by and large, there's so many variables in the business that it's hard to do that successfully. I've never worked at ILM, but I expect like at the ILM level where I've heard like you get one round of notes and then that's it. They're the kind of studio that has that leverage that can do that. But I think by and large, most vendors are not Weta and ILM. And
I don't even think that's true there, man. I think
I don't know. There's what, 6 clients on the planet that can afford to pay for visual effects, and that number shrinks every time there's a merger. And you can't upset them, or you go on the blacklist and you don't get jobs for 5 years.
What always surprises me though is it's not usually the finance people that are pushing for this kind of perfection. It's people who are experienced and again are maybe in a position of ownership, and they would like to sleep better at night. So they would like to design, like the idea of it is logical, but I'm always surprised by people who have worked in chaos, who have never achieved this perfect plan themselves.
Yeah.
Now expect everybody else to do it. Here's the downside of it. If the system works, like it creates a tightly coupled system in the we're talking about that. I love this book, Meltdowns: Why Systems Fail. So a tightly coupled system is essentially something that is like really connected. So like, you know, this bolt keeps the Chernobyl from exploding. If anyone screws up this bolt, it explodes. Film traditionally has a lot of flex in it. Like if you're on a film set, there's hierarchy. So if someone gets sick or can't make it that day, someone steps up. So there's this resiliency built into the film sort of ethos. And then as we've tried to get more data driven, we have these kind of tools, which are interesting, and you want to use them for sure. I'm not like disparaging their use at all, but the idea that they're going to like robotically control humans and human sentiment if you don't build flexibility into those modules of those systems, then you're creating this tightly coupled system where like I've been on a show. Well, I got hired partly to be on a show because their system wasn't working. And it was basically like you make a bid and you assume that is gospel and you don't reevaluate it enough. You don't look for the signs that maybe your assumptions were wrong, and you don't adjust with the client. You don't adjust with your internal team. And then all of a sudden a department of people shows up and there's no work because the computer said it should be ready by now. But they didn't, the people on the floor were too scared to tell the bosses that it wasn't working, and the bosses weren't looking to see if their systems were working. So you create these systems. And the test of any system is, are people actually doing it or are they working around it? In another place I worked, a big place, the key to success was to and I've heard this from other people from different studios, big studios. As a producer, your main game is to show you're doing this, but you're taking on the risk because in the background, you're doing something and working around the system that is put in place.
Sure. Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah.
It happens everywhere to some extent. And you've hired adaptable driven people and then you gave them a system that doesn't work, they're going to work around it. But they're doing so all at their own personal risk. And there's this complete disconnect with reality in some of these bigger places, which I think is some of the where the sentiment about whether it's bid wrong and all that kind of stuff. If you take those people and you kind of like give them the context, like forget about all this stuff. We have these 30 people, look around. These are your teammates. We have to get this work done. Those people surprise themselves about how much they can do. And this is why you're seeing like the back, you know, like the, what's that, Godzilla minus one, where it's 30 guys or 30 people, because they don't have those. I mean, I'm sure they're organized in some way, but there has to be a flexibility in that organization. So
they're basically doing one show. I think it was like the director had some, if I understand the scenario correctly, had some background in visual effects, and like the team was there to do the show and nothing else. Like, and you know, obviously Japanese work ethic being what it is, I'm sure they burned the midnight oil.
But either way,
to get that show done. But,
I've seen it on other shows where I mean, the last few shows I did, it's like, well, they're all Mission Impossibles. Yeah. You look at it and go, well, this is dumb. And I don't know if this is going to, and I like by feel, I'm like, I don't know. That's going to be really tight. I don't know if it's going to work. And some of the times you need like a client to understand that as well. So that you're, and really that's what I'm getting at is the bid days are a tool. They set up, the bid days should set up a framework. They should set up a thing to, you know, measure against. Like, oh, we're not doing great against this or whatever. But really what they're trying to do is set up a resource pool to complete the show.
Yeah, for sure.
And I feel like that is because, you know, the disconnect between the person who's managing bid days and the person who is hiring is like so often. If you have departments, it's even like worse. The producer is responsible for the bid days, but the department hires the people and assigns the people. So there's like a total disconnect. But in the end, any estimate from any industry is trying to figure out how many people it should hire to do this, or how much render, or how much whatever, how much resources it gets. And so the one of the keys to my success in different places is that I also have experience doing resource planning. And generally speaking, I can take a challenging budget that if you implement it in this day, I'm going to robotically day style, you would die. I can take that and add extra into it, often by taking some things away. Like, you know, like you look at those driving comps and you say, you know what, I think we can outsource the roto or something, and then I can lower the thing, and then I can pay for the CG supervisor to be available the whole time instead of you know, leaving the show in 6 weeks. So it's like layers on layers of like problem solving, and the bid is just your framework, and in visual effects in particular, but to some extent in animation, it's also a check against the client's changes or assumptions. So if I say this is supposed to be a simple driving comp and there's 10 of them, and you give me 30 complex ones, well, then there should be an understanding between you two that there's going to be a change. And it's important. So that's the main reason you're doing it. And like, if you've ever worked with a contractor, like a plumber or whatever, they're like kind of, it's interesting because they're more like an artist bidding directly to you. And the trend I notice, because I think about these things, is that they must get burned a lot. And they feel it. Like if they have to do two extra hours, it's coming out of their pocket. Whereas like maybe an artist is abstracted. Like, so they tend to be a little aggressive in the bid and a little like in the client relation way, like, and their assumptions are very, very clear. Like, you are only getting this. And then it's like, and the way their language is very like, aggressive, like we assume there's not going to, you're not going to have this, and you're going to, if you don't pay us this, and we're going to, you know, it's like, it's a bit more aggressive than even like VFX bidding language or legal language. And it's, but it's the same sentiment. It's like, we are, this estimate is based on only doing this and this and this and this. And, you know, and they really want to be in a position where they can walk away if you change your mind, or they're often, sometimes if they're wrong. So to me, it's like, if you've had that experience, it's a little off-putting from a client service perspective. So to me, it's like, it always reminds me of like artists.
Except sometimes the clients are in on the gag. Like, I've seen so many pre-show bids where it's like, this value works if the camera's locked off. Yeah. We'll tell the director to lock it off. They know full fucking well, like, there's no way they're going to be able to tell the director that they're going to lock off the camera. And so you get it back. The camera's fucking all over the place. And
because they're playing the same game. They're like,
they play the same game.
They've been asked, okay, we need to get this for $10 million. Yeah. And they're like, yeah, they've already done their own estimates. Like, when you work with a client side VFX supervisor and a producer, like, they've already bid the show.
Yeah. So there's a couple of additional traps that are worth flagging here. We had been asked multiple times throughout my career to bid on multiple packages.
Yeah.
So like, they dangle the good package and you're like, oh, I want that package. But everyone wants that package because it's heavy on comp, it's light on CG. But then they get all your numbers for all the shots and they stick you with the shitty stuff. So like, yeah, you know what? You didn't get those 300 shots of comp. You got 4 shots of CG chaos. And they're like, wow, you need the easy stuff to offset the hard stuff. We had one show, it's like, okay, we just want to see the numbers for what it would be to roto-anim this character throughout the whole show. You know, it's never going to happen. And then, so you're like, okay, whatever. And then, of course, yeah, this roto-anim is now the preeminent thing of the bid. So, like, having a bit of skepticism, too, when you're doing these things, like, be aware that if you're bidding CG in particular, like, if you're presented with just the CG without enough supporting work to kind of make it worthwhile, you may just have to say no. Like, I've been in that position before too, where you bid all these packages. What they give you is a fragment of a package, and like, it doesn't really work financially because the stuff that they've given you is all the hard stuff, like particularly FX driven stuff. But on the contrast, we had picked up work that other vendors couldn't do because they wanted water work, and we were actually pretty good at water. So like,
yeah.
We did that as a client service thing for a really massive studio that we wanted to build a relationship with. And we knew we weren't going to make a huge fortune off it.
You know? But that goes to our original conversation, right? Like, so if you're bidding, you know, and that goes to the sort of, you know, like when I used to outsource a lot, and then somebody gave me the advice that you need to make it worth their while too. So, you know, there's a selfish tendency to say, well, I want to get the best price and best deal for me. But then you have to, if you want them to work, and this goes for internal teams as well, especially if you're in different jurisdictions, if you want the team to do like work hard for you and work well for you, you got to make it good for them. And I went through this, we were also a subcontractor for a lot of people. And the teams that gave us like a good solid mix package, you could tell they knew what they were doing, and and it's like, kind of like, well, this is a nice, and you're like, you take it and go, oh, this is great. You know?
Yeah.
Or, you know, like I remember on Expanse a lot, it would be, they would give us an idea of how much overall we would have. It's not a promise like per se, but it's like, okay, there's $1 million. We've allocated about $1 million for you guys, and it's probably going to be mostly this stuff. So then we can start to plan.
Yeah.
You know, it changes a little bit, and we would have those episodes where all of a sudden we have tons of comp instead of spaceships, and we'd be like, scramble to do them. But at that point, I was just honest with the client. When you give us those things, it's not a problem. We can do it, but it's a different makeup of crew than we have maybe 80-90% of the time. So yeah. If you know there's an episode like that coming and you let me know, I'd have the same conversation with the outsource vendors I use a lot. They're like, hey, if you can let us know what's coming or give it, even if it's not, doesn't come true. And it's the same kind of thing, but maybe you take that special water work because you just want to work with that client and you hope the next time they give you more stuff. But I
find, you have a gap, like we said last time, like if you've got your FX people are sitting around and you're going to lose some money, but not as much money as if they were idle, or you know you need them for the next show, but there's this 3-month gap where they're going to be idle.
Yeah, you say to the client, hey, we have a bunch of, I have lighting people sitting around, you know, if you need help with lighting. But often I feel like the teams that do that kind of shenanigans, they're difficult to deal with in many ways.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. We are talking about really execution and planning and the culpability on visual effects vendors to be savvy and deliver for their own sanity as well as the clients. But man, there are just some terrible clients. Like I don't want to let them entirely off the hook, because like I've had clients that like they can't judge the animation until they see it in a comp. It's like, well, that's not part of the bid, and like they just insist on it, and so you're faced with a decision like, do I go over this individual's head and go to the studio and say like, what the f? But then how do you think the rest of that show is going to go? But sometimes you have to, and then oftentimes the studios kind of check out, like they don't like the drama either, and they just want the show done, and it's like kind of a remote problem for them. It's more of a you problem. So again, it kind of comes down to personalities and like who you get along with. I have found relationships with certain studios are way better than others, that some studios take the vendor complaints and requests seriously, and others really kind of couldn't give a crap.
I'm going to shout out Alcon Entertainment. Used to go through this process every year on The Expanse, where every vendor would do a postmortem. I think they were all scared to often say everything they wanted to say, but they would go through the process. Alicia Hirsch would go through the process, collect all the information, and we would have a big meeting after every season about what we could all collectively do better. I've never heard of that before, and on a like a multi-vendor show, but it was so cool that they were they changed things, not everything, but they changed things every year, and it got better and better and better until COVID hit and everything exploded. But yeah, like it was pretty interesting, and it made it feel like you're all on the same team. And any time you're working with a client, whether they're goofy or ridiculous or not, if you feel like you're on the same team, like for you have that client who can't judge animation until they see it in the comp, well, you got to adjust then too. I mean, yes, it's difficult. Yeah. It's not ideal. But then you got to adjust your workflow so that you don't try to finish comps. You just try to, or maybe the animation, like we had this kind of challenge on Expanse, and we never solved it per se, but we tried to get better every year at it. It's like, how can we show the previs closer and closer to the shot without the animators the previs guys having to do that much extra work? So that meant like a previs animator had to learn basic nukes so they could put stars in the background, because otherwise we'd have to pay a compositor. So that sort of, again, back to that, if you use the bid days for good and not evil, then you can sort of say, well, you know, that's not great, but if I spend a little time here and we train these guys, it'll maybe make them a little slower. So we need to add a little more to previs, but then comp gets the stars already in and they're basically approved. Then maybe that saves us time later. You know, if you have the flexibility to sort of manipulate the time inside those, you know, whether it's the episode or the show or the sequence, then you can kind of use those bid days and get the most out of them. And, you know, frankly, again, like I said at the beginning, this is a yes, service business.
It is. Yeah.
If that client can't judge that stuff, like, then you got to kind of work around it. Like, people have to work. I'm not a CG supervisor, so like, I'm not going to go and fix your Maya file for you. So you need to figure it out. And as a result, I have to put maybe more people on the team that do that kind of stuff. But then I don't have to have as many production people because I can do all that stuff myself. And it's the same if you had a, you know, I work with a guy who's like an art director, and, you know, he could basically do all the art direction on a small show himself, but, you know, he's not a producer, so he needs a full-time producer to do it. So this is where I feel like the bid days are a framework, yeah, but they shouldn't be the be all and end all.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah.
But I do think as artists, if you're an artist listening, they can seem like it's like an oppressive like framework that's being put on you. But the reality is it's not that bad. And if you kind of embrace it yourself, you'll be a better business person, and you'll be, you know, so, you know, one, we had a comment like from the last bidding show, some positive feedback about, like a lot of people are being forced to sort of freelance, and they have had now have to think, how much do I charge for this? You know? So if you, you know, the macro kind of things matter, like how bad do you need this? And, but then you need to get good at understanding your own time. And it's the same for a show team when, or a VFX supervisor. At some point you get into, after you've done a number of shows and you've looked at the data, you start to think, well, you know, like every year after Expanse, I would look at how much, how long it took us to do a shot. And I could kind of tell you, you know, three seasons in by feel, that's, that shot's about this much money. And if we get that much money, we'll make money on it. If we get a little less, it'll be tight. And if we get too much less, it'll be too expensive.
And that's one of the reasons why I think things are so much harder these days. Like, we had the benefit of doing the Expanse for, I think you did five seasons of it. Mm-hmm. And like, you get a bit of rinse and repeat after a while.
Yeah.
Mr. X Vikings was foundational for that company. But yep, like, I think Vikings was 24 episodes for 10 years or something ridiculous.
Yeah, it was a
like,
long time.
And like, we were starting the second season while the first season was still wrapping. Like, there was a consistency, and we in fact had Mike Borrett and I think Dominic Romain were like consistently on that show. A lot of the senior talent were the same on that show.
Yeah.
So it created a predictability and a comfort level. But now it's like, you know, even Game of Thrones, it's like eight episodes, and then there's a 2-year hiatus. Like, it's way harder to build any kind of momentum and consistency now, because every show is like its own original beast, and you might have your own original creative team. And even if year after year, on season after season on the show, the executives might have changed, the budget might have changed. I just, it's
but that's where I feel like the energy needs to be, like,
yeah.
So, you know, you do your best to bid to win, and like, I used to if I sent a bid and they approved it right away, I'd be like, damn, I probably could have got more money.
Yeah.
And if they go, yeah, this is good, but can you just adjust this, then I'm like, okay, I'm right in the zone.
Yeah,
like, I'm right in the zone. Yeah. And if they're like, whoa, you're too high, then it's like, oh, whoops, I blew that, or or whatever. But you have to, on, I think that's true, you're right, but it was a luxury to work on a show for six seasons, although,
yeah, you know, but it wasn't a luxury then, it is now. Like, I think then it was much more common.
Well, it was pretty uncommon at the time, like, honestly. Yeah, because I remember Expanse, like, after season three, we thought it was over.
And by the way, like, that's not taking anything away. Like, you still have to deliver. Nothing is a given in this business. So, like, just because you did one season doesn't mean you're going to get the next one.
So, well, and that's, in fact, that was our number one goal in Expanse, is don't be, you talked about it, don't be that one vendor.
Yeah.
Always don't be the goat, was, I think Tom told me. And he didn't mean greatest of all time. He meant an actual goat, you know? So that was our goal. And because we were one of the smaller studios moving into that and getting bigger through that. So you had to, but inside that, you have to have that mentality, I think, like there's, you know, not the well, you told me this was wrong. You have to have the mentality of the problem solver mentality. Like, okay, yeah. So even if I underbid the show and you all are living it, we're all living it together and we still have a job to do. So it's kind of like, you know, you can yell at the wind, but it doesn't do anything. Yeah. And I mean, I would get being the producer and supervisor on some shows, I would get like the, you know, this is way underbid and whatever. And I'm like, and I sometimes, especially the more senior people, I'm like, okay, I understand what you're saying. You're kind of like, there's a, maybe like an emotional reaction and an anxious reaction, but it's like, they've given us $5 million to deliver this work. You're telling me you can't do it? Cause it's like, okay, fuck off. You know,
unless it's $8 million of work for $5 million.
I know, but it's like, I'm not that stupid. I'm like, yeah. I didn't get it that badly. Sure. Yeah, and yeah. You know what I mean? It's like, it gets to a point where it's like, what's your actual complaint? You know,
yeah.
Sometimes it was like, I don't have enough time, or a lot of times is I don't know how to do this. Mm-hmm. Right. And you, again, if you go and bid like, so I'll give you an example, the shed. I could not get anyone to quote that job because it's not something they normally do. Nobody in Toronto, at least, will jack up a building, an outbuilding, and repair it from the side. If I was in the country where there's farm buildings, probably, and people do it all the time, people could tell you, oh, it'll cost you this much money, blah, blah, blah. In Toronto, they're like, I don't understand it. I'm not going to do it. It's going to be too much money. This is the same kind of reaction you get sometimes on shots. And like, I've given that reaction. Like, I don't even know what to say about that show. Like, it's so weird and subjective. I don't understand. But the process is, okay, take this super complicated, weird thing, calm down, and start to break it up into things you can understand. Well, I don't know what the magic effect from that monster guy is going to be, but I do know we have to paint that guy out right there. Okay. Start there. That's a day. That's half a day. That's this. That's this. Now I'm into the weird space. Okay, well, the baseline is 5 days. Then you're starting to go, I don't know, 10?
Now you're into your notes here.
Now you're into, like, I don't really know. And then, yes, now you're assuming like crazy.
Does not include the Death Star. Does
assumes simple animation and, like, yeah, you know, there's some, you know, legal techniques to sort of make it so that you can decide whether that's the right move. But some of those shots are like, you got to take a leap of faith.
Yeah.
And my feeling with that kind of stuff is my approach generally has been to be honest with the client as well. Although you have to also be careful because you're at the sales point at that point.
Yeah.
Where if you're like, you know, if you're not confident about it and you are clearly aren't confident. Like whenever someone overbids something like wildly, that means they're not confident about it. That's been my, and you can see it. So, and you'll sometimes get that feedback. Like, you know, like you bid like 40 days for a shot and they're like, this is really high. I think you're overthinking it. And sometimes they're underthinking it, but having that dialogue, but it's definitely like a flag for you're not sure how to do it, and that's okay. But yeah, so, but anyways, in the end, like, I think people like to complain about bidding. None of those people actually bid.
It's an art more than a science.
And I think I think, like I said, it can be used as an oppressive tool. I think like production people sometimes, and to be fair, they're under pressure from finance people usually, they use it in a sort of robotic, non-useful way. And then it creates this kind of tension between the art, the creatives and the production people, and they're not working together. So whenever I've come in to fix a show that's having like budget problems and stuff, the first thing to do is get everyone to understand what it's actually going to take to get done. And then to push the creative people to maybe like come up with different solutions or try to do something faster than they are assuming. And you have to thaw them out a little bit. And then once they get past that kind of like the sort of tension, you see it in like politics today, like people won't dialogue because they're, you know, they're on two different sides. But once you get them thawed, then you start to find, well, actually we could do that faster, or, but this is, we can't do it faster. And then on the production side, it's like, you know, sometimes you got to step back and let people do their thing to see the progress rather than hammering them. And like, you know, artists are artists, like they need time to do stuff. So if you're bothering them every hour about whether they're done, then they're not going to be done because they're talking to you and all you're doing is winding them up. So yeah, I mean, we could do a lot of podcasts about implementing bid days and schedules and all that kind of stuff, but
yeah,
but I think, you know, it's important to understand that, you know, like in animation, sometimes it'll be seconds per week. This is a big change for me going from bid days and bidding shots in quite detail to going into a much more general thing where it's like the cost per minute is X. And it's sort of like, then it's up to you to manage the complexity inside that framework. And that becomes the hard part.
You don't want to overcommit on your first animation delivery, or you set yourself a bar you can't deliver.
Yeah, and that's definitely happened. But the interesting thing for the people who think like, you know, I always do a, when I do a VFX breakdown, I take a little bit more time and I do a very detailed one. But, you know, other people I know who are, you know, more on the sort of like bidding producer side could do a way faster version and it wouldn't have as good assumptions. It wouldn't be as well thought through, but often the number is very close, you know? So this is why I kind of hesitate to, I would not implement a system where the bid is gospel on the first day. Yeah. And it's, you know, systemically maneuvered all the way through the system. I think I would use it as another data point and another target. But I would not use it exclusively. So to me, that would be a mistake. Yeah. So, and it's funny how often you can go like, okay, well I spent 3 hours and did this bid and it's, the show is $2 million. And then someone walked up beside, like, who doesn't know that, goes, how many shots? Yeah, probably like $5,000 a shot. Okay, about $2 million. And it's like, okay, well, you know, there you go. And I think we had talked off camera about, like, you also have to produce these bids quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah,
like, speed of execution matters when you've got a client, getting back to building client confidence. Like, if it takes you 6 weeks to come up with a bid, like,
yeah, you're not going to get it. And
that becomes super challenging when you're like, if it's a single site, usually that's easier. When you're doing multi-site bids and you're like trying to divide the work in some way that makes sense, that takes into account the tax credits, that takes into account the skill and everything else, all that negotiation internally gets out of hand, it takes too long. You just shoot yourself in the foot. You end up with nothing.
Yeah. I remember, like DNEG, I would do bidding with a producer and it was beneficial because I could do a lot of the work for her. I was comfortable in Excel and I could put it in the right place and do the assumptions and all that kind of stuff. But then even if I did a lot of that work for her, she had to then go and like translate that across all the places and make sure the site balance worked with, you know, whatever, and then work with finance to come up with the actual number that they were going to produce. So yeah, it can get quite complicated, or it can be ridiculously napkin simple. Like that's kind of the interesting thing about bidding anything. It's like you could eyeball it. I mean,
just don't let your business development people bid, because that is, they have an incentive to close deals, not an incentive to execute. So I would just say, allow those people to generate the leads, but then have a bidding producer who's to some extent accountable for the execution to take a look at the numbers for sure.
I always liked when the people who are doing the biz dev were ex-producers. And because even though they're probably going to skew down, they at least know, they know they're going to, they don't, you know, it depends on, again, your incentive. This is, again, is a company decision. How are you incentivizing those people? Like, are you incentivizing those people just to get the job, or are you incentivizing them to get the job and when it completes?
Yeah.
You know, we talked about, like, there's some studios that that bid, and they try to bid, like, honestly. I'd say Rocket Science was one of those, at least when I was there, where it'd be like, this is a, we took a little longer to do a bid. It was a thoughtful bid. This is a Tom Turnbull kind of approach, and people really liked it, because you would get back and you'd be like, okay, like, these people really thought about it.
And they know what they're doing, yeah.
Yeah. Whether you thought it was wrong or right, it was useful to the people. And then there's the type of people who bid low and change order. And that's pretty common. Like, and you know, the clients don't love it, but they kind of bring it on themselves a little bit too, because they put pressure on you to hit a target, and then without really any information. So, you know, you bid and it's like, nope.
And some vendor studios are more known for that too. Yeah, like
100%.
And they have a reputation for the change order as being where they get their profit essentially.
Yeah. Or, you know, and like, again, it depends. Like, if you've only got bid days, that's one thing. If you've got weekly fees, then you can use weekly fees to scare people into completing the job with the bid days.
That's super hard to get, but like very important, because especially in the current environment where all these shows are getting pushed around, if you have a show pushed for 6 weeks and you've got a team sitting there, that's, you're already screwed on day one.
You're already behind.
Because you're behind the eight ball for 6 weeks of work without a single shot produced or even a single task completed. So they don't want to sign because they want the flexibility again of, you know, they basically may turn vendors into insurers. Like, if there's a production
they also problem, don't know. Delay, they, like, know. Having worked in post, like, my first job was in management was a post production, and it was like a giant string of contingency plans. Mm-hmm. So, like, we think the edit will be done here. If it's not done, we have a buffer. And
yeah, all I'm saying is that the vendor pays, like, the VFX vendor has no control over any of that stuff, but ends up suffering
due
to all those things, right?
And 100%.
So to the extent you can protect yourself, particularly if I were a small studio, I would insist on it, because the risk is just too high. Like, I mean, with the strikes, for example, we had a show that was supposed to kick off, and then there was some drama with the strikes, and so they went on a break, and then they were supposed to come back, so we brought the team back, and then there were some legal issues with the show, and it's like, none of this is our fault, and like, you're supposed to be turning over, we're supposed to be in full production to hit your deadline, and they said, well, we're just going to push the deadline then, and, you know, then that makes it worse, because then, like, not only are you starting late, and you're getting penalized at the front end for a slow start, you're not even able to get out of it, because now they're pushing late on the back end, and they think, well, that's great, we're giving you more time, but you know, when you do the bid, you're bidding for a certain amount of overhead for a certain amount of time. And now if you double that time, you're kind of screwed. So,
well, we might be going longer, but I think that's an interesting point. So, like, in VFX, in all things, there's shows that are too low, too long, too short. So, like, if you have a $1 million show and it goes for 2 years, and so people used to come into my office and go, I got a $500,000 show, it's 16 weeks. And then I go and I just, like, do a quick math, reverse the day by the thing and say, okay, and then as a rule of thumb, I would say, okay, so say it's about 10 people for 10 weeks. I don't know, I didn't do the math, but 10 weeks, you add 50%, and that's probably your peak crew, depend if it's a regular kind of mix show. So, you know, it's 10 to 15 people for this many weeks. Okay, that seems doable. But then when you get that, you know, it's like 10 people in 6 months, and then like a year and a half, it's 3 people.
Yeah.
Well, that also includes the management, in my calculation, would include the management on the show. So it was basically like, So nobody's working on that show. So that's too long. So yeah. First thing it'd be is like, can we do it shorter? Can we start later? And so there's those kind of creating of the box kind of thing that you're working.
Just take a really easy example. If you have $1 million at a 4 month show, that's $250,000 a month. That's not bad. If you have $1 million over 10 months, now you're, $100,000 a month. That's vastly different, right?
And there's a point where it's like, it won't work. Like you can't. Yeah. So when you get to things like, if it's all comp, okay, maybe that's easier. If it has CG in it and you want CG to overlap with compositing, you can't do it. Or you're paying in like a support. You have to keep a person on when there's no bid days to pay for them, back to the bid days. So there's that. And then aside from that, the biggest, and that's the same for animation or whatever. The advantage of animation is that in theory, unless there's some kind of pre-production that you're not a part of, you start when you want to start. The danger is you are often the pre-production. So if you don't complete the pre-production, your production phase will be delayed and you'll create the problems that I'm about to describe, which is like the plates don't come in. Well, it's not plates in this case. It's just, you're just not ready to go. So you have to be you almost have to schedule an animation production in 2 or 3 phases. Like this is pre, this is production, this is maybe even post. Whereas in VFX, you're just at the post side. And the number one thing that will kill your budget, other than, overtime and that kind of stuff, is delay.
Oh, yeah. So, I know we are getting probably long before we wrap it up, but like we've seen so many companies go out of business, VFX companies, because of the downtrend of the market. And like, ironically, it's created this over competition for what is available. So the scraps that are available, there's this hyper competitive bidding, but particularly if you're a small studio, the exposure you're taking on is like do or die. So there's actually, in my estimation, another cycle of bankruptcies coming with these small and medium studios, which took work on during, because I know stories, they took on 5 or 10 shows. Well, it sounds like amazing, but all the shows were losers financially. And yes, they got the cash flow in the early part of their year when they needed it. But I'm sure they did it expecting a rebound where they could pay back all the the money they were borrowing. And that really hasn't happened. So I think, unfortunately, we're going to see some other studios suffer. And at a time where we should be like kind of tightening the screws, not accepting pushes, getting paid for production delays, getting paid for schedule shifts, we're actually in the weakest position to ask for any of those things. So
it's
a really weird dynamic.
Yeah. I think too, like a lot of companies will have to rethink their whole operation. Like, I mean, I was just part of one, went from doing a feature film to doing less and less and less, to almost becoming like a commercial house where like 10 people are working on a show. That's a humongous transition in like three months. And I have to think most big visual effects companies are having the same problem where they're like, okay, coming out of, you had 200 people, now you got to do a show with 10 because you've already, spent the money to keep those 10 people around. And now you kind of have to, so it puts a lot of pressure on those 10 people to get that stuff done. Yeah. It's an interesting world out there, but,
and even the risk reward, like, let's say 10% is a decent return in visual effects.
Yeah, which is not much.
Some places may do better, some places may do worse.
Yeah.
But on $30 million, that's $3 million. If you're an investor, maybe that's okay. But if you're making $5 million and you're getting $500,000 with all, when a render bill could be $500,000 if you do it wrong, like, the risk and reward balance goes out of whack. And
this is why I think people are, as much as they don't like AI, they're going to be not even just AI, they're going to be forced. Everyone's looking for ways to be able to do things quicker, and they always have been, but it's like maybe hyper focused now because the technology is there, but also the market is crap. if you can unlock that secret where the, you know, 10 people can do a 30, 40, 50 person show, then you can maybe take, you can absorb that risk. Like, you know, you see it in commercial houses. They have people laying around waiting for the next show. And at the peak of visual effects, it was the same. And that's because, you know, the price point, what those, you know, small group of people can do gets paid a lot. So it's like they come more of a premium kind of profit. So, but the way, you know, visual effects had been basically functioning on volume, and now it needs like a combination of volume and maybe premium effects, but it's not clear what the market will return to. Well, I think it's clear. I think it won't return.
I think this is it. Like, I don't think there's. It might creep up over time again, but I don't think there's any
nostalgia, yeah,
of success coming. Like, I think this is kind of the new normal.
Yeah,
and you should design your studio for this environment, which means lower your ongoing cost to the extent possible, which unfortunately means labor, right?
Yeah,
it's the biggest cost, and bid sanely. Like, it doesn't make sense to land work just because if at the end of the day you're losing money on it. You can do that in the short term as a cash flow solution, but you know, it's not a business recipe for success for sure.
Yeah, and I think flexibility of crew is more, I think it's kind of funny actually, these big kind of machine ideas, if you're holding on to them, you're gonna get wasted, because I've
technically
seen,
that's going to be a huge problem. Companies that have built themselves up with a legacy pipeline, which used to be an advantage and used to give you such an edge on doing work, I actually think it's going to be kryptonite. I think,
but not even pipeline. Like, so like this whole, we were talking about this bid idea where you're like, okay, it's a lighter for a day and this for a day and whatever, and segmenting it off into that. What I've seen recently is, you know, like big companies had trouble fitting in generalists because it doesn't fit into those mold, right?
Right.
But now everything is that way.
Yeah, no, I think we talked about it. The return of the generalist. I absolutely think that's going to be a thing. If there's three tasks you can do as opposed to one, you're going to be three times more busy and three times more useful and three times more paid.
But, yeah, so you can use the bidding as a way to break down the work, but I think that might change. I was thinking about this actually too, is like, if you're bidding for AI tools, I don't know that it's not clear exactly what that is. Like, it's sort of a hopeful thing when you put it down on the paper.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting kind of challenge. I haven't had to face that too much. We did a little bit of it, but I imagine now that would be more of a thing. Like, how do I?
Well, these studios are wanting vendors to attribute a 30% savings to AI. And it's like, that level of efficiency doesn't yet exist, in my opinion, maybe in certain.
Well, you could do it on paper and not be, and have it not be
paper,
true.
Yeah. But the net result is they just want everything for a third cheaper. Like, that's what, you know, they don't care how you do it. They just, you know, but that pricing pressure is real, and it's like, it's very challenging, I'm sure, for.
I'm wondering like, so if you have now, I was thinking about this with Unreal. It's the same problem. It's like, how do you, like, the Unreal people didn't have like the same segmented, you know, work assignment. So it's kind of like 5 days for Unreal.
But I think we could safely say that Unreal is not a thing in visual effects.
But it's the same logic, though. It's the same logic.
But there was this, the same thing we're talking about with AI. Like, this, people talk like this about Unreal to some extent, and like it was going to replace everything, and you know, we were all going to be working in real time. And
but that's not what I'm getting at. It's more if you have a black box of any kind where one person can do tons of different stuff, how do you bid that?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So Unreal is the example, because I've actually had to do that where on, was it Time Bandits, we had guys who did Unreal work, and it was kind of like they did everything. So you're, sometimes layout is like that. Like, I don't know if you're doing like really complicated, like, it's like, I don't know, sometime. And so because it's not segmented, and then yeah, I'm thinking too, you know, if you're using AI tools or let's say machine learning tools to like get things down really fractional, at what point do you just bundle it into comp?
Right.
You know, when you're bidding that kind of stuff. So, and like, when is it at the point now? It's probably not at the point now where out of 10 compositors, you can assume that all of them can use machine learning to get a roto. So the one super genius tech guy is the one who's doing it. Like, there's always those kind of changes, I guess. I've seen them before, and well, I'm sure, you know, I would like to, let me leave with this. I would like to have the opportunity to try to figure that out. So hire me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause I am still semi-retired, still retired.
Yep.
I'm willing to come out of retirement for the right job and money, ideally. But anyway, so that's a little bit about bidding. Obviously we could talk about, you know, you can see by the way we kind of like weave into different subjects that bidding is kind of like a core thing about how everything works. So it's good to understand. And I'd say if you're an artist, it's good to get better at understanding your own time so that if you did need to be in that position, you would know yourself when you move up in the ranks. You know, okay, well, I would take 3 days to do this, and then this person takes 2 days, so they're better at this than me. These are useful things to know, or they're worse, or whatever. And also, if you needed to, you know, go solo and freelance, you have a realistic estimate of what it would take you to do it so that you can bid the right amount and get the job. And more I see that, like, as we're talking about all the pressures on keeping labor low, long-term jobs seem to be less likely, freelance jobs, more likely. And if you can, you know, confidently say I can do that work faster than most people or even consistently at a speed that is worth money as well, then, you can do that. That's the advice I give every new artist, like track your time, because your perception of your own time is probably different than the reality. And it could be eye-opening, but it also could be confidence-inspiring. Like, actually, I'm a little better at this than I thought. I did that recently with our podcast edits. And I'm like, actually, it's kind of going faster than I thought it was going to go. So these things sometimes, like, are not always in negative feedback as we're used to in VFX and animation. Anyways, on that note, let's end it there because I'm sure we've talked way too long about bidding. So I hope the 50 of you who are psychos enjoy it. And yeah, so like, subscribe, you know, enjoy the VFX Existential Crisis podcast.
Good now for now.